You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. We eventually knew it just as Weinstocks, but Weinstock Lubin and Company was a Sacramento shopping institution for, can you guess? It was about 120 years and had a place in the lives of almost all Northern Californians because even if you didn't shop there, you passed by and enjoyed the window displays and you watched the growth of this department store change the city landscape. Well, the story behind Weinstocks has been chronicled in a new book and a first book written by Annette Cassis. She's in our studio today. Welcome to Insight.
Hi, Beth. It's nice to be here.
So you approach this as a historian, but as you were going through the facts, you have to have heard this sentiment, this nostalgia about this great business.
Absolutely. And as I talk to people about it, they would say, oh, I remember that. What happened to that? One of the things that was surprising as I went through the research documents in the archive was the attitude of the employees. And that's where a lot of this community spirit comes from. The employees were so invested in the store and they had lengthy careers there. So yeah, the human connection, the connection to the community was very evident.
So the Once Upon a Time is two half-brothers, David Lubin and Harris Weinstock.
Yes.
And the two brothers hatched an idea.
They did. And we're going all the way back to 1874 here. It was David Lubin, who was the elder of the two half-brothers, who came to Sacramento first. And he wanted to start a dry goods store that was based on a new principle at the time, which was one price for the goods. The goods were marked with a price. That was the price you paid. And that's not the way business had been done. His half-brother joined him about a year later. And they built this entirely new way of doing business here in Sacramento, and they eventually grew it into a department store.
There's a funny little side story about why it's called Weinstocks.
Yeah, there is. When the Articles of Incorporation were done in 1888, David Lubin, who is, you know, he was a little bit more reserved than his younger brother, Harris Weinstock. And he decided that if he put Weinstock's name first, that the younger brother would work harder. And I actually, when I read that in the some of the old files, I thought that's a little insulting. But I don't think Harris Weinstock minded. He had kind of that personality. He was very, very much lively and energetic and outgoing. So, you know, he let it roll off his back.
Why decide to look into the history of a department store? You're not family. You're not connected to anybody. What intrigued you about it?
Well, I've always done a lot of research work into consumerism, consumer studies, and focused in the West, in Sacramento. And when the publisher came to me, they said, you know, we're looking at landmarks. And these community department stores were landmarks in the city. And I started thinking about that. And I thought, yeah, there's a lot more to it than a building and the goods that were sold. The story is really the people. And that's what got me intrigued and involved.
Give us the short version then of the development, because there was 4th and K and then the move to 12th and K.
Oh, yes. And that 12th and K building is still beautiful. The store began at 4th and K. As they expanded, they started just tacking on extra space. And this happened with a lot of stores. They decided to build a big department store and they erected this store around the existing structure, gradually moving into departments as it was completed, and also not an unusual thing at the time. So there again at 4th and K in 1891, they opened this very large, beautiful department store called the Big White Store because of its color. That burned down in 1903. They rebuilt on the spot, opened a new place in 1904, and they were there until 1924 when they opened 12th and K. And 12th and K stayed as the flagship store until the downtown store that opened in 1979, the one with the beautiful glass Romanesque arches that's now a Macy's.
In that era of the 20s, you tell a story that's very revealing to the power that Weinstocks had in the community. And the McClatchys, of course, had the paper at the time. The Sacramento Union was another publication at the time. And if you would just share that, because it has to do with a picture that the newspaper was printing on the front page and a big ad that Weinstocks was running inside the paper.
Oh, and that became a storm that raged for days back and forth. I think it was a December 10 edition of the Sacramento Bee, 1920. And on the front page of the paper, there is a photograph of three men hanging from a tree. They were three gangsters. They'd been described as gangsters that were captured in Santa Rosa, and a vigilante group had broken them out of jail and hung them. And Carlos McClatchy, who was the son of publisher C.K. McClatchy, at the time he was managing the paper, and he took this opportunity to do something that was really a technological marvel at the time. He had the photograph taken on site. It was the early hours of the morning, midnight, 2 a.m., and you had to use a flashlight to take the picture. It was raced to Sacramento by plane, landing at Mather Field, and then processed to be in the paper that evening, and it was on the front page. Well, that same day, Weinstocks had had an ad for a children's Christmas party, a reception, and it was a large ad, and they were furious. They were furious that this thing was on the front page of the paper. So Weinstocks took out another ad saying, we want to apologize to the families and the children of Sacramento that they were subjected to this picture in a paper where we put our ad for children. Carlos McClatchy allowed that ad, but at the same day, he wrote an editorial that said, the people of Sacramento do not need Weinstocks to run the city, and they do not need Weinstocks to edit the newspaper. Weinstocks fired back in other papers about this, and it went back and forth and back and forth. The Sacramento Union got into it, and Carlos McClatchy ultimately said, you know, other papers have published far worse photos. World War I had recently ended. There was the bombing on Wall Street in 1920. These images had been all over newspapers. So Weinstocks really was trying to make a point about something that in that era, you know, times had changed, people had changed, and they needed to just get over it and move on.
It's a stunning story about the players, the journalism, the business, and the reach that a department store had into the psyche, the lives of the community. And the thing that astonishes me, and I should let everyone know, I'm talking with Annette Cassis. She's the author of a new book, Weinstocks, Sacramento's Finest Department Store, is that Weinstocks isn't here anymore.
It isn't. And it's easy to think, you know, everyone remembers Weinstocks, but it ended in 1995. And there are a lot of people in the area that I talked to that said, I've never heard of this place.
Oh.
What is it? And then you tell them and they say, wow, I didn't know that there was this landmark department store in Sacramento.
Well, thankfully, you've spent so much time researching and someone saved a box of letters.
Oh, all of the company files. Someone who was employed at the offices, it was changing over to Macy's. They recognized these things were in danger of being thrown out. Photographs, employee newsletters, ledgers, the ledger that survived the fire in 1903, all of this material. And they gathered it together and donated it to the Center for Sacramento History, which is the archive of the city and county of Sacramento.
There's an entire part of the story where Weinstocks comes under the umbrella of Broadway Hale. Mm-hmm. And we'll just leave it at that, but say thank you to you, Annette, because you do have a book signing and we'll share that information.
Yes. Yes.
So thank you so much for this piece of Northern California history.
No, thank you. Thank you for letting me share it.
And the book is part of Sacramento Archives Crawl event, and Annette's signing will be Saturday afternoon. We have more details on our website at capradio.org/insight. Thanks. And that's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Our senior producer is Jen Picard. Insight's producer is James Morrison. Our associate producer is Midori Yoshimura. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Thank you to our engineer this week, Evan Matzler. And thank you for joining us.